Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome. My goodness, does it feel good to say this, to the MMQB podcast. Albert Breer's here. I'm Connor Orr. I will address this very quickly at the top of the show, and then I'm sure we can talk about it at some other point if you guys are still interested or whatever. Thank you for sticking with us. I know the production schedule's been inconsistent. The episode's been going up, then not going up, and I think we will eventually, all that stuff, the whys, the hows, all that stuff will, you know, I will leave that to other people to discuss and to bring out, but I just want to express my sincere appreciation to you guys for hanging out and letting you know that we're back, we're up, we're rolling, SI is great, we're doing awesome, Albert and I are here, the whole football team is back. So We're all thrilled to be able to say that. We're grateful to be part of this. Working here is an incredible privilege, and hosting this pod is an incredible privilege. So we're back, and, you know, weekly episodes from here on out. So
nobody has to go on Twitter and post their favorite SI covers from the last 45 years. I'm happy to be done with that. Everybody who had their own, like, reach for clout there and pulling up like the Jim Valvano cover from 1984 or whatever. You don't need to do that. I'd be remiss if I didn't say, and this is going to be kind of like self-congratulatory, and people can be patient with that for a second. We'll get into all the draft stuff here, but I'm just really grateful for the group that's around us. Like, I don't think like that our NFL team took their foot off the pedal. Obviously, there were some challenges associated with everything the last 3 months. And, you know, I think, like, it takes a toll on people going through stuff like that. But, I mean, from John Plume to you, Connor, to Matt and Gilberto, you know, I don't think, like, if you didn't know what was going on, that you would know anything was going on with the job that our NFL team did over the last 3 months. And, you know, I hope that shows to our audience that the same sort of coverage that you expected from us before all of this is the same sort of coverage you're going to get from us after all of this.
And you will be able to find all of our work. You know, it was being kind of posted.
Now, whether you like that kind of coverage is up to you or not. Just make that clear too.
Right. You will be able to find all of our work again at SI.com, the magazine, all that stuff. I mean, we are, you know, it's back to normal. It's back going. And we can say, you know, we can be like coaches and lines, say that we don't read stuff. It means a lot that, you know, obviously there's just horrendous things on the internet, certainly, but just everybody reaching out, asking where we can find the work still, saying that you miss it, you know, all that stuff. I mean, it really does. It means a lot. And so just know that it, Albert and I are thrilled to be back. I'm not going to speak for Shelby, our producer, but I'm sure he feels the same way too.
Shelby can speak for himself. He still has to deal with the two of us.
Yes. I don't know if that's good or bad, but so thank you guys. And just in time, right? We got the draft coming up. We got a solar eclipse today. The Orioles are in third place in the AL East. So everything is good
there. Yeah. I think the solar eclipse hits our area around 3:30. So you must be a little earlier than us.
3:24 for the park near our house.
Okay.
Is going to be when it hits. And so I'm going to have to run to pick up my son. And then I'm going to pick up my son. We have to go to my wife's office where she is hosting a solar eclipse party. And I have to pick up the glasses. You have the glasses.
They look like the 3D glasses, the 3D movie theater glasses.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a scam this is. When you can get them for 79 cents on Amazon, what it's really protecting us from. But I guess just so we don't look like Trump in 2016 and we're just staring directly into, staring directly into the sun. But yeah, my wife's hosting a solar eclipse party. They had sun-kissed soda and moon pies and Milky Ways and Starburst. And so every kind of solar-themed space-themed candy. But my son's daycare is locking it down. They're afraid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're like, no. Like, it starts at 2.
They're going into lockdown?
It starts at 2, and they're going to keep them away from somebody. Because they're worried because they're very little that the kids are going to be like, whoa, and then just stare at the sun.
And then they're blind.
Which makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Although I did ask somebody the other day. So, you're not supposed to stare. You're not supposed to look at the sun, but you can without going blind.
You could kind of squint at it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I asked somebody, is it different than that? And they're like, no. It's not more dangerous. It's the same thing. So for whatever it's worth.
Everybody tells me how good sunlight is. Why can't I just stare directly into it? Mainline it, really get it in there. So today we're going to talk about the quarterbacks, which I'm excited about. I know that in my, I'll call this last month, my Churchill period. I was just in we were basically in the wilderness a little bit, but I'm very excited to disseminate what I know to you. And I'm sure Albert is too. I think we essentially have, and I'm curious what you think, but we have a top guy in Caleb Williams, and then there is this sort of 2018 sort of middle ground there where there's a Josh Allen, and then there's a Sam Darnold, and might be a Lamar Jackson in there. And so,
You have your Trevor Lawrence, and then underneath that. Or is this 2020 where you had Burrow and then Herbert and Tua? There was disagreement on which one was better. And then you had Jordan Love, who was sort of he was sort of the Josh Allen of that class, the wild Bronco that needed to be tamed. What I mean? So I don't know. There's a few analogies in there.
I'm excited about this class, and we'll start here. I'm excited about this class because, I was talking to Andy Reid about this not too long ago, and I asked him, I love asking Andy about quarterbacks because the first thing, he always has the same response, which Andy knows the quarterback position better than anyone, but if you ask him a theoretical question about the quarterback position, he always goes, we don't really have to worry about that, Connor, because he says it every time, but then he gives a very smart answer, which is that they are thrilled. People in the NFL are thrilled because these guys are throwing more than they have ever thrown. And we have guys like Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, who have been playing for 4, 5, 6 seasons. They have somewhere between 1,800 and 1,900 attempts, anywhere between 43 and 59 games. Bo Nix's first college start was against Justin Herbert. And Justin Herbert is in his fifth NFL season. Think about that.
That's crazy. Yeah. So that would have been 2019
wild?
Then?
Yeah. Yeah. And they won. Bo Nix threw an incredible last-second touchdown pass.
Wasn't that one of those week one games at the Georgia Dome? Or not the Georgia Dome, I guess Mercedes-Benz now, right? It'd be the Chick-fil-A kickoff classic or something
like that. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
there was branding attached. But yeah. I think that if my theory, my hypothesis is, if you don't get Caleb Williams, which almost everyone is not, I do think that the land, it's going to be a softer landing for some of these teams.
Let's hit Caleb first.
Okay.
Because I do think, like, we should pay homage to the sort of prospect this is.
Yes.
And I want to thank you for putting me in touch with your buddy, Will Hewlett, who was awesome talking about Caleb.
Yes.
And, you know, Will brought up something that was fascinating to me. And this is real, like, football dork stuff. But so, like, he was, you know, he took me through some of the biomechanics with Caleb. And I asked him, I was like, so what makes him so unique? And this was, like, absolutely mind-blowing to me. So he said that generally a quarterback only has 4 miles per hour range on his ball, like when you're trying to simulate game conditions, right? So a touch throw might be 47, a drive throw is 51. He told me that Caleb Williams has 10 miles an hour range on his ball. So in essence, he can like control it between 46 and 56 miles an hour. And that level of control and that level of being able to change speeds and, you know, you sort of look at it like a pitcher, you know, a pitcher who's got a great changeup and who can put the ball where he wants to put it. And not only that, put it in a spot, but get it to that spot the way he wants to get it there. You know, I thought that was a really interesting thing that sort of, I'd say maybe a little overlooked, right? Like with Caleb is like just the gifts that he has as a passer and not just a creator, you know, and not just a thrower, but as a passer, you know? And so I think there's so much about Caleb that's so interesting in that he has the comp to Mahomes, but he's a better runner than Mahomes was coming out, right? And he sees the field really well. Now, is he as big and strong as Mahomes? Probably not. Like, that's probably where Mahomes has a little bit of an edge, like arm strength and size. But there's just so much to like about him. And I mean, the best thing to me is like the situation he's going into. Like, this isn't like the first year of a build. You know what I mean? Like, he's going into a fully formed situation where Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles have been building for 3 years. So he's going to be throwing to DJ Moore and to Keenan Allen and to Cole Kmet. And he's going to have DeAndre Swift behind him and Darnell Wright in front of him, like a markedly better situation than Justin Fields was in the last 2 years, you know? So I just think there's a lot to like about where Caleb is now and maybe where he's going. Presuming those guys all make it through this year, you know, because obviously things can change in a hurry.
Certainly. I mean, I think it was a good idea. You know, it was a good idea to go Rams tree for the offense because, you know, Caleb Williams had the Cliff Kingsbury influence, and Cliff Kingsbury doesn't necessarily run a Rams offense, but to say that Cliff and Sean aren't incredibly close would be a lie. They understand what each other does intimately. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's not going to be like a situation where like you have Kyler Murray and a new offensive coordinator. Like Caleb's going to be able to handle this offense really well. And Shane Waldron, outside of Russell Wilson, has proven himself to be a phenomenal play caller.
Oh yeah.
And so I think it's all going to work. I think what my question is going to be, when Caleb puts it on the table and says, no, it's got to be like this, how does Shane respond to that? And so, and I think the give and take and the work between the two of them is what's going to be interesting to me.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, I think that there's that, like, okay, like, you know, because like one thing that's interesting, in talking to some coaches, and I've really started to dig in on the quarterbacks and talking to executives and coaches and trying to get like the most honest like assessments of all of them, there is like this. It's what you heard on Zach Wilson, right? Like, only this is a much more talented player than Zach Wilson, much more productive player.
He does remind me a little bit of Zach, though.
But there was like the one thing that came up with the Zach thing, Connor, was like that. And I remember hearing this about Zach, and this really crushed Zach in the end, right? Like, I think it killed him. Was a couple of his critics that I talked to before the draft in 2021 said, yeah, he makes these spectacular plays, but you're watching it and it's like, oh my, there's that outlet there, and he could have gone here, and he could have gone there, and he's turning like down layups. You know what I mean? He's turning down like mid-range jump shots to shoot from half court. You know, And so, like, I don't know. Like, that part of it, he's going to have to learn to play. They're going to have to put some guardrails on him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to have to put some level of, like, okay, like, we want to retain your creativity, but we got to figure out, like, where those lines are for you right now. Because there are plays like that. One that, like, was brought up to me that I thought was fascinating. A coach I talked to the other day said there was a play where it was, like, I don't know, 3rd and 9, right? And so Caleb takes a snap, takes his drop, and there's a slant. And I think it was Brendan Rice who was open right over the middle. That's Jerry's kid who played for USC last year, right? And the coverage is there too. And if you look at it, it looks like it would have been an easy completion, but he probably wouldn't have picked up the first down, right? But like if you watch the structure of the play, it's like he should go to Rice in this play and hit him right over the middle. It probably would have gotten 7 yards. They're in 4th and 2. They punt. Instead, he pulls the ball down and starts running around and breaks off like a 25-yard run. Now, if you're a team, what are you going to do? You're going to go into the meeting and say, okay, what are you thinking here? Because you want to know that he saw that, right? Saw the completion there and had it in his head that he did the math, like that's not going to get the first down, and ran around and picked up the 25 yards. And you also want to know that he knows that those equations might not work the same way in the NFL. So I think that there's some really interesting stuff when it comes to that in Caleb Williams. But his ability is off the charts. I think, you know, he's coming into the league at the right time when, you know, I think, you know, guys like Mahomes and Allen have opened people's eyes to a different style of play. And yeah, man, like I would bet he's going to be really successful in the league. Now, will he be Mahomes? That's a different question, but I bet he's going to be really successful.
I mean, that's up to him a little bit, and it's up to, I mean, what's tough about this, and I mean, let's just come out and say it, is that if this team is 4-6, you know, we're going to be talking about a coaching change, you know, mm-hmm. And yeah. this was kind of the one complaint, you know, because I don't know, I won't speak for you, but November of last year, it was like, okay, the Bears are probably going to switch things up. I mean, that's what I was that's what I understood the situation to be, at least. And, you know,
new team president, which was part of it, and all of that.
New team president, but credit to Matt Eberflus, coached really well down the stretch. Mm-hmm. Played some good teams tough, you know. And
the defense really came on.
Defense really came around, and so okay, you give it one more chance. But when you extend that to the point where you don't start over with new coach and new quarterback, you then set yourself up for a situation where maybe Caleb has two seasons.
Right. And, it's like almost, you know, like damned if you are, damned if you don't, right?
Right.
Like, because if he doesn't play well or they don't have a good year, everybody's getting fired. If he plays great, he's losing his offensive coordinator.
Right. Yeah. And we'll see, right? We're way ahead of ourselves. The Bears are probably going to trade this pick to the Pit. No, I'm just kidding. You know, we're way ahead of ourselves, but I do think it's worth considering the landscape when we get to that point. Now, what I want to know is, I know who my number two is. I know who Daniel Jeremiah has as his number two. He's like the new, you know, Daniel Jeremiah is now like the gold standard, right? Mike Mayock doesn't mm-hmm. do like, you know, does Mike Mayock still do a mock draft?
And DJ, I mean, like, we both worked with DJ.
DJ's the best.
Does an incredible amount of work. Like, he knows these guys inside and out. And he approaches it like a GM would approach the draft process. Like, I can just tell you, like, and I, you know, deal with a lot of these guys. There are a lot of guys I got a lot of respect for. You know, Mayock obviously was the gold standard forever. I think McShay has done a phenomenal job over his career, and I really enjoy talking to him. And DJ, I put DJ up there with any of them.
Can I tell you my two favorite? I have a favorite McShay story and a favorite, a favorite Mel Kiper story and a favorite DJ or Mayock story. And then they're very quick, and then we'll go on. Okay.
Yep.
Favorite Mayock story, Mike Mayock. He, you know, Mike Mayock does 100,000 interviews around this time of year, right? And I was doing a story for SI on Dr. Z, who did an insane mock draft where he got like 14 of the first 15 right and both trades.
Like, Peter talked about that one nonstop. Like, we heard about that all the time.
Believable.
Yeah.
So I'm interviewing Mel Kiper, and he's calling me Ryan the whole time. He's like, well, you're right, Ryan. That's a good question, Ryan. And, you know, Ryan, I'll tell you this, you know, Ryan. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to interrupt
gone,
this.
And it gets to the point where it's gone a little too far where you can't correct him.
Right. So, we're 10 minutes into this thing, and I have all the respect in the world for Mel. And so I was like, you know, I'm just, whatever, you're the GOAT, whatever. And so about 10 minutes later, I go downstairs. I was at my parents' house, and I was like, I told my dad, because my dad loves Mel Kiper. And he's like, oh, that's hilarious. I get another phone call. It's Mel Kiper, and I pick up, and I was like, hello? And he goes, oh my God, your name is Connor. I'm so sorry. And I was like, Mel, it's fine. Like, you are the legend. Don't worry about it. But he was like, I just want to let you know that I know that, and I'm sorry. And he hung up. And that was like the coolest thing ever. Like, this guy is so busy. Though. Yeah.
Yeah, that's and then, great.
Mayock, my first week, one of my first few weeks at the NFL Network, he was like untouchable during most of the season because he was just working constantly on prospects and everything like that.
And he called games during the season and all of that.
He did Notre Dame that year. And I still, by the way, think he was awesome at Notre Dame. And they pulled him off because he was getting too technical on the air. But like, because
it was sort of over. The whole thing was like, it was over like the layman's head, right?
Yeah. And then we got Jason Garrett. So thanks, guys. Really worked out for us. But I guess they said it a content meeting. They're like, Connor's going to do a story on Joel Bitonio. And so Mayock happened to be like listening to like the content meeting. And then like through four back channels, I get a text from like the head of content at NFL Network that just was like, you have to call Mayock now because he's so passionate about Joel Bitonio that he needs to talk to you for this story. And I was like, this is like a second round guard out of Nevada, at that point. And it's just like, this is just a window into these guys. Like, we all kind of see them as these ubiquitous, like, okay, there's the draft and they're going to do all their mock draft stuff. Mm-hmm. But genuinely, DJ Mayock,
McShay
and Kiper and McShay. Phenomenal people, just good people, really hardworking people who know their stuff. I know who all of them have as their number two quarterbacks. I know who I have. I'd like to know who is the number two quarterback on your board, and I want to see if we agree or disagree.
I've gone back and forth on this a little. I think it will be Drake. I don't know. I mean, I love Jaden Daniels. I just think so. I said this on TV up here in New England last night because we were discussing, because there's the assumption Jaden's going to be gone at two, and then New England's going to be picking between Drake and JJ. I just think in this environment right now, especially if you're in the AFC, you almost have to swing for the fences. And my biggest fear is the quarterback that you're okay with the first couple of years and then you're looking to replace after 4 or 5 years. It's like the Jared Goff thing, you know? And Goff's a really good quarterback, and he's led two different teams to conference title games. But eventually the Rams got to the point where it's like, we need someone to put us over the top, you know? And I like look at the landscape of the AFC. If you're one of these teams in the AFC looking at quarterbacks, and, you know, you've got a bunch of NFC teams that are in that market now, but the Patriots are in the AFC. Is Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, are they going to be enough to eventually get you behind that little velvet rope and into the club that the Bengals are in, that the Chiefs are in, that the Chargers are in, that the Ravens are in, that the Bills are in, right? Are they going to be good enough to eventually have that bouncer lift the velvet rope and let you in the club? And like, I just look at Drake and I'm like, that's the one. You know, that's the one that like physically is so gifted and he's so young. I had a coach point this out to me over the weekend. I didn't realize this. Like, he has only played 2 years of football out of the last four. His senior year in high school was canceled because of COVID. And then he was redshirted 2 years ago. Then he had the year last year where he played for Phil Longo at North Carolina, had a great year. They had a bunch of kids go to the NFL off that offense. And then this year, everything went sideways. So you think about that, like the amount of growth potential, the fact that he had to carry the offense this year. I think he's not as talented as Josh Allen, but there's a lot about his trajectory that screams Josh Allen to me. Yeah. You know, like just the athleticism, the arm strength. And it was interesting because he gets compared to Herbert a lot, right? Okay, so, and we've all heard that. I think physically that might be the comp, is Herbert. When I talked to another scout on this, one thing that came up is it's almost the reverse of Herbert, right? Where both of them, their last year in college, they played an offense that wasn't great. They had like sort of stripped down, like the personnel around them was a little stripped down, and they adapted differently. Like with Herbert, what happened was the disappearance of the spectacular play. So you didn't have bad plays, but you didn't have overly great plays either, right? With May, it was you still had the spectacular plays, but now you had all these bad plays too, you know? So, and that's what, like, that's where the Josh Allen comp, because that's what I remember about Josh Allen coming out of Wyoming, is you had like these plays where you scratch your head and like, what is he doing, you know? But you also had the spectacular plays. And I don't know, Connor, it's just like hard. Like, can you have Brock Purdy unless you're incredibly talented around him and compete at the highest level in the NFL today? And remember, Purdy's in the NFC, not the AFC, you know? So I don't know. Like, I look at this environment where you're, especially again, if you're an AFC team and you're going to have to beat some combination of Burrow, Mahomes, Allen, Lamar, who am I missing? Herbert, in succession to get to a suit, just to get to a Super Bowl. And that's sort of why Russell I like lean towards May. Yeah.
Mr. Inevitable.
Minor setback for a major comeback in Pittsburgh.
That's right. Okay. So I...
You know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think the ceiling's highest. That's all.
That's funny because that's the reason I like Jaden Daniels at 2. And it could be a total eye of the beholder thing. But to me, Daniels, so, you know, it's crazy. He said, same thing where he got, you had mentioned kind of the advanced, like the mile per hour stuff on Caleb Williams. There was a point in his career where he was doing all the 3D motion stuff and figured out that he leaned forward too far when he was throwing and revamped his whole motion. And when he throws a ball now, it looks like if you watch him just uncork a pass on an empty field, it looks like Steph Curry shooting in a gym. It is just like the sound, the violence of it. Like I just feel like I'd have a hard time as a scout standing in there, and I know that scouts can't be predisposed to this kind of stuff, but my goodness, like just the everything that it gives off, like shockwaves, almost like the earthquake you and I survived last week. You know, but I love Daniels.
I had a little glass vase, and my house moved an inch.
So
harrowing.
So our West Coast.
No, I didn't even notice anything at all.
Our West Coast listeners are going to be like, "Okay, bro, welcome to our everyday existence."
Now we're the guy in now we're the guy in Atlanta when it like snows like half an inch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, here we go. We shut. Yeah. What was it? Charlotte. They had the snowfall, and everyone was like, "Why?" And the whole town just shut down.
Now we're that guy.
So I. We have like floor to ceiling windows in the back of our house, like looking out into the backyard. And so my kids are little and we're on spring break. And so the house starts rumbling. And my first thought was, I was about to turn to my wife and say, "Did you seriously overload the washing machine again?" Cause that's what it sounded like. Like sometimes she'll throw like four.
I'm
four
a big culprit of that.
She'll like throw four comforters in there. And then it sounds like we're kidnapping someone in the basement and he's trying to get out. And so I gave her the side eye like, "God, I can't believe you would do that again. Like, I got to go down there and fix it." And, you know, but then it kept, like, the house kept shaking. And then all of my kids and me and my wife all ran to the floor-to-ceiling windows to look outside, which is the absolute worst thing that you can do during an earthquake. And so afterwards, I said to my wife, I was like, "Okay, like, that bad dry run. We weren't prepared for an earthquake at all. But now we know."
Well, so somebody told me like, you're not,
you got to get in the doorway or you got to get in the bathtub.
So like, right. Like, so like my friend, Tanya Gangula, used to cover the NFL. She covers the NBA. Now she was telling us on our text group that that's not true anymore. like that.
Get away from the windows.
They've amended the doorway thing.
They've amended the protocol.
The doorway thing, yeah. Oh. Like so, and she she's from California originally, and so she grew up going through the earthquake drills, you know. And she said, yes, they've amended that now. So I don't know why. Something really bad must have happened, but
like the door frame collapsed on someone or something.
Yeah,
jeepers.
Yeah. So like I don't know why, but like she said that they have amended that and they no longer tell you to stand in a doorway.
They no longer tell you to stand in a doorway. Okay, so it's all bathtub now, right? You got to get in the bathtub.
I guess so. Yeah, yeah. Or like in school, wouldn't it be you go under your desk? Isn't that what they say?
I mean, it makes the most sense. Like you have
because stuff might be falling from the roof to the ceiling or whatever, so you want to protect your head.
You get like the debris. I loved within like 11 minutes there was the you know the guys in New York who sell like the I'm from New York FU t-shirts, you know, like in the little things.
Little kiosk things, yeah.
They had 11 minutes later, they had a t-shirt that said I survived the New York earthquake 2024.
I know, I saw that. So like the guy the guy who did that, did he have like a store? It must have been like a full-on store then, right?
You must have been able to print like it in the back. Press. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, good for him.
I mean, way to capitalize on the moment, you know?
Yep.
That's absolutely all it's all about. But anyway, that's how I felt when I watched. I had a good tweet, by the way, during the earthquake, and it didn't get the steam that I thought it would. And right after the earthquake, I tweeted, I now know how Hugh Jackson felt when he watched Robert Griffin throw try out for the Browns. Remember,
right.
He told Jeff Darlington that I felt the earth move under my feet when I saw RG3 throw. And I was like, I posted a screenshot of the article.
And you know, RG3 loved that.
Oh, like, yeah.
Loved that. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he filed for some sort of copyright like on that, like in the immediate aftermath.
RG3 is the man. I once before, when he was with the Washington, my wife and I, when we were dating, used to go to Qdoba every Thursday. I would go to meet her at the mall at Short Hills, and we would go to Qdoba. And the Jets were playing Washington that day, and me and RG3 were at the same Qdoba. We were hanging out.
Oh, nice.
I mean, we
nice.
Didn't hang out, but I was like, hey, that's RG3. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. But I think he's an interesting name. If you want to get back to Jaden Daniels.
Yes, that's where we should go. Yes, let's get back to Jaden Daniels.
I do think, like, so that's my concern with him is, like, one thing that's continually come up is that he runs like RG3. And RG3 was obviously a phenomenal athlete. Like, it was almost like an Olympic-level sprinter, if I remember right.
Yes.
Or hurdler, whatever it was. And, like, set the league on fire as a rookie. Part of RG3's problem was he like would open himself up to these comically big hits, and he was built like a basketball player. Like his build is like kind of like wiry, you know? And eventually that was always going to catch up to him. And somebody told me, I haven't found it yet. I got to look it up, but somebody told me there was like a Jaden Daniels reel on Instagram or Twitter or something where it's like a Looney Tunes theme of the hits that he takes, because he looks like the whole thing is he looks like a Looney Tunes character when he takes a hit, like just takes these massive hits. And it's a credit to him because he's tough, right? Like, and he bounces back on all of that stuff. Like, but at the NFL level, is that going to catch up to you if you continually open yourself up to those hits? And here's the other problem with that. So somebody mentioned, like, this is one of these things that a team brought up to me, and then I had like three or four other people confirm it. One thing that worries me about him is when he runs, when he pulls the ball down, he's running to run, not to throw.
Right.
You almost never see him pull the ball down, scramble, and then throw it downfield. And you would think with Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, there would have been plenty of opportunity to do that in the LSU offense. And I understand it to some degree. When you run like he runs, like, of course, it's always going to be an appealing option to do that. I just don't know. I don't know if you can coach that out of a guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's one of those things that's so instinctive. I'm not sure. So that would worry me a little bit, like how reliant he is in those spots on his legs and how he opens himself up to hits. Like, you combine those two things with his build, and I think that that's where the concern would be, because he's outrageously talented. He's a really gifted passer too. Like, he's really, really talented, but like the how he'll hold up thing, how reliant he is on running the ball, I think is a fair question to ask.
You're right. I was actually just watching the low light reel, and he really does.
Did you find it?
Yes, I found it. And he does get lit up, and he's not a good, like Bryce Young had so much practice with it that he was a good faller. He fell well. Like, I always say that it looks like, he looks like a foldable beach chair. Whenever anyone comes up to him, he just sort of like, whoop, you know, folds up and gets down and doesn't really, you know, take a shot. Whereas Jaden is big, and I think is, you know, he's an alpha, and, you know, he wants to be in there, and he wants to get in the mix. But obviously you kind of pay the price for that a little bit. But I wonder if you could...
I mean, some of these hits, now I've got like, I don't know if I found the reel, but some of these hits are just unbelievable.
I'm watching them behind a thing where it says you have to sign up. Like, I have to sign up for TikTok. So I'm like, I'm kind of inferring, but they look bad.
One of the hits they had, you remember in Sonic when you get hit, like all the rings would pour out of you? Like one of them has him getting hit and like all the rings are pouring out of him.
Yeah. That's this is a great Sega crossover pod. Last few actually. But yes. So if you could coach that out of him, I think he's got Mahomes' arm talent, Mahomes' yep. size, and Mahomes' athleticism. And wouldn't you, like, isn't that more appealing to you? I don't know. Like, because you're talking about the highest possible ceiling, especially in the AFC. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that push him in that direction for just a little bit? I don't know.
And I don't think he's going to have a choice because I think he's going to – I don't think it's going to be like a question because I think he's going to Washington anyway. So I think he's going to wind
you
up
You think
in
the Jaden
NFC.
Daniels is going to two?
Yeah, okay. I think he's going to. And I think like – and I think there are a couple of – like I've gotten some, I'd say from the ground, some like tea leaves just talking to other people who've talked to the Washington people who've sort of hinted at it. You know, the other things that have sort of come up consistently is how he fits Cliff Kingsbury's offense. And Cliff really likes having, you know, the quarterback with the option to run. And so that's one. And then two, you know, having a defensive head coach, a lot of times guys will tell you, like GMs will tell you, the defensive head coach is always going to go for the guy who he has the most trouble defending.
Uh-huh.
And more often than not, that's the super athletic guy.
Yeah.
Is like, that's the guy who keeps you up at night. That's the guy who's, you know... Like that's the guy who's the reason why you're staying in the office till 1 or 2 a.m. on Wednesday, right? Like, so I think those two elements of it certainly would indicate that Jaden would be a fit in Washington. And I think like I think that's a good result for him. I mean, he winds up there. I think they'll be able to build a productive run game. They've got some depth in the backfield. And then you look at like receiver and he's gonna be throwing to Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson. Like, it's not a bad result.
No. Do you want to hear my favorite tidbit that I've uncovered about Jaden Daniels from talking to people about him?
Sure.
He regularly takes his offensive lineman out to dinner. Do you know where? This is a pro move.
Hold on.
This is a pro move, by the way.
He's at LSU, so it has to be a place that's in the South.
No. Don't think about that.
Don't do that. Mm-mm. Okay, don't do that.
Chain restaurant.
Offensive.
But,
chain restaurant.
But, like, good chain. It's not Chili's.
I mean, it's not P.F. Chang's.
It's not P.F. Chang's. No.
I was going to use it like a Mark Davis joke there, but I'll keep that one in the holster. A good chain. Capital Grill.
Close. Ruth's Chris.
Okay, there you go. So I was in the right family.
You're taking five guys out there to Ruth's Chris, and I mean you're dropping.
Oh yeah,
you're like dropping some NIL money. You know,
you're bringing the big boys with you now. Is it just starters or is it the backups too?
That's a good question. But it's like, you know, I think that is a pro move. I think that is pro move. I think he gets it. I don't know.
I think the other thing is too. He does have the. You know, he has the Brock Purdy thing, which is the high volume of starts.
Super high volume of starts. Yeah,
I think he's 55, because Bo Nix is at 60, I believe. Is that right?
Bo Nix is at like 120. Yeah. Let's see.
And then I think Penix is only at 41. Penix might be 41 because of all the games he lost to injury. And I think Jaden Daniels is at like 55. I want to say Bo Nix is at 60. I'm almost positive that's the number for Nix, because I know Nix is the high of the guys.
Oh, no. They don't add up this column. All right. Here we go. 14 plus.
You know who does have it, though? Believe it or not, Wikipedia. Wikipedia does have the game started thing. That's one thing I have learned.
Let's see if I can do this live, though. Okay?
Okay.
12 plus 4.
I have the actual number in front of me, too.
All right. 12 plus 4 is 16. And then 16 plus 13 is 29.
Yep.
29 plus 12 is 41.
Yep.
41 plus 14 is 55.
You got it. 55 is
what. Oh, number.
Yep.
Take that.
So that's. Boom. I mean, I'd have to look at Brock Purdy, but I think Brock was right around there, and that's one of the things you. I mean, you and I have both done stuff on this, on like how maybe the effect of Purdy's, the effect of Purdy's success would be the valuing starts. Yeah, it's actually more. He had 46 starts in college, so. But you know, I've talked to Brock about that too, where it's just the volume of things you've seen, you know, and it's the fact that you've had to like, all right, like now this, you know, defensive coordinator has seen me and game planned me twice. So what's he going to do the second time around? It's it's also like having to go through some level of failure. And Jaden Daniels certainly had to do that at Arizona State, you know? So it's just the amount of experiences you have, the amount of things that you've seen, you know, I think that that's a big plus when you're talking about Jaden Daniels, especially if it's like Jaden Daniels versus Drake. Like I said, like Drake is still very much like a puppy, you know, like he lost his senior year of high school, lost that first year, redshirted that first year of college, and then, you know, played the last 2 years. That's a lot less time on task than Jaden Daniels has had.
The quarterback that I want to be educated from you about, and I know the least about, and I figure you would know the most about because you love Michigan, is J.J. McCarthy. And I don't know how much smoke, because it's weird, right? When you play for a really good quarterback-centric coach, and then and then that coach has the cachet that Harbaugh has, like, is he in some way artificially inflating the stock? You know, this was a guy that I don't think we really thought about. At least I didn't necessarily. Like, to me, I always had Caleb, Drake, Jaden in that first tier. And then I really liked Bo and Penix and some of those guys in that second tier. But to me, like, everyone's talking about him being a top 10 pick. So I don't know. What are you hearing on J.J. McCarthy? And what are your thoughts?
I think he will go in the top six or so. And I there's a lot to like about him. He's a five-star recruit, first of all. So like, this was a major get for Michigan, after Ohio State told him no. I'll slide that in there. It was a major get for Michigan. You know, he went out and he beat out a kid who turned things around for them, right? Like in 2021, like Cade McNamara was at the center of their resurgence and JJ winds up beating him out. And you know, I think like there's, from a physical standpoint, he's a very loose athlete. You can see the toughness. You can see like when he gets going, he is like, he can run away from people. And like the arm strength is really good and he's got a good head for the game. The intangibles are off the charts. I'd say the drawbacks are like the size, right? Like, and you know, like I think he sort of checked that box a little bit at the combine and putting on the weight that he did, but it's still a question, like a little bit more of a narrow frame. And then I thought this was really interesting. Like the people who, you know, you get people who really like him and then you get people who don't see it with him, right? And the people who don't see it with him will tell you, yes, he's got a strong arm, but if you watch him, like if you put him side by side with Caleb or Drake, look how much he has to put into the ball to get it there. Like, and essentially when you watch him throw, you can see like his whole body's getting put into it.
Yes.
And what a guy like that needs is time and space, mm-hmm. right? Like a guy like that's probably going to need a little more space to throw the ball if he's going to wind up, right? And he's going to need a little more time to throw the ball. And that's why I thought it was really interesting when a coach gave me the comparison of Brock Purdy. Because it's like, if you look at him at Michigan, they were, that was a really, really good team that ran the ball exceptionally well, that had really good offensive lines in front of him. And so he had that time and space. So what's going to happen when consistently that time and space is taken away? What's going to happen when the pockets close down on him, which is going to happen in the NFL? And if you look at it with Purdy, one thing you notice is like, he doesn't play from muddy pockets a lot, you know, like he does a lot of things really well. I just thought that was a really interesting comparison, you know, because it's not so much, are you going to be, I've come to look at it this way. It's not so much, are you going to be happy with him after a year or 2 years? I think you probably will be. It's when you get 5 or 6 years in, are you going to be looking to replace him? You know? And, I mentioned the Goff thing earlier with, like, are you in that spot where the Rams are, where they replace Goff with Stafford? Goff's a really good player. And I actually think there are some similarities between Goff and McCarthy, just in their build and kind of like the way the whip. I think McCarthy's a better athlete. Goff's probably a little bit better of a passer. But like just the whip, you know, like the way they throw the ball, there's some similarities there. So that would be my biggest question, McCarthy. I think like, He can be a really good player and probably a really good player right away. It's just, you know, when we're talking about getting yourself into that club, you know, with the Buffaloes, with the Cincinnati's, with the Kansas City's, with the Baltimore's and the Chargers, like, is he going to be good enough to get you there, or 4 or 5 years from now, are you going to be sitting there like, okay, like, do we need to replace this guy to level up? I think that's the question.
It's interesting, right? Like I love Jim Harbaugh. I mean, I think he's great for the NFL. Part of me, though, is like, okay, if he's that good, then trade Justin
Begrudgingly,
Herbert.
I love Jim, too. He's great.
Like, how could you not? But, okay, if you love him that much, then trade Justin Herbert, you know?
Right, and that's exactly what, yeah. I mean, because then you restart.
But he's not going to. The reason that he took that job is because Justin Herbert's there. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, because, yeah, like, on one hand, he says, like, J.J. McCarthy is generational and he's Mahomes and all of that. And then in the next breath, it's like, yeah, you know, sometimes I just like to call Justin just to see how his day is going.
Yeah.
Like he's like similarly obsessed with Justin Herbert. You know what I mean? Like, so look, I you can't fault Jim. I mean, like J.J. meant a lot to him. You know, J.J. was one of these guys who helped change the face of that program and deserves a ton of credit for it. By all accounts, a really good kid and really smart and tough, like all the intangible stuff, checks all those boxes. And so if you're Jim, of course, you're going to be grateful for that. And I think Harbaugh deserves credit for that, like for showing his gratitude towards a player who is really, really important to accomplishing what they accomplished at Michigan. Does that mean I think deep down, like he wants to trade Justin and take JJ? No, I don't think that's what it is. Because if you went to the Patriots right now and offered Justin Herbert for the third pick, don't you think the Patriots would do it? And then you've got JJ.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, it's never going to happen. So let's just, but how close is Michigan, by the way, to creeping up on Ohio State for most national championships?
Is it close? Like, Michigan actually technically has more, but most of them happened before the invention of the car. And this was actually their first consensus national title since the Truman administration. So Ohio State has has eight, I think it is now, eight. The eight, though, like most of those have happened like, you know, in the era of color TV. So that's the difference.
Minnesota sneaky has a lot. Four. Yeah. That's a lot.
Doesn't Princeton or Yale or Harvard, one of them has like 15 or something like that. One of the Ivies has an obscene amount.
That's solid. Yeah, Minnesota has six.
Yeah.
Look at
it. They were a wagon back in the day.
Ohio State has as many national championships as Harvard.
See, I told you.
How does that land with you?
Again, like, you know, was this like in the days of FDR? Probably, right?
I mean, Harvard, you know, the last one was in 1919. So, you know,
That drought could be broken any day, though.
Yeah, the 100-year anniversary has since passed. Maybe in the next 200. Yeah, Princeton. Yeah, Princeton has 15.
And I think, but wasn't
Yale has
Princeton
18.
Rutgers? Princeton Rutgers was the first college football game,
right? And then
is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, Yale has 18. So, wow, Nick Saban.
Because Pop Warner was the coach at Yale, right? Who was the other one? Amos Alonzo Stagg, I think. Is that right? Like, Yale had some super famous coaches.
I have to look up Amos Alonzo Stagg from West Orange, New Jersey, by the way. Yeah, he was at Yale.
Was he?
Yeah. And
with Pop Warner, am I right about that?
Stockton College, Susquehanna. All these guys. That's the best.
I have the older brother of a good friend of mine is like, I think he still is like the punt and kick return record holder at Susquehanna.
Wow.
Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Yeah. I love
Tyrone Crooms, his name.
All these guys have coached like 9 sports.
I missed a big one, dude. I missed a very big one. Walter Camp was the Yale coach.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know,
Walter Camp is a big one.
Pop Warner, I think was
I wrong about Pop Warner?
Cornell. He was at Cornell. He was also at Iowa Agricultural, Carlisle, Pittsburgh, Stanford, Temple. And then he ended his career as the assistant coach at San Jose State, which is just really funny. Like,
oh, the picture of Walter Camp is great too. Here, I'm going to send this to you. The Wikipedia page, like the guy, like legitimately looks like your insurance agent. Hold on, it's
I'm gonna teach you how to bundle home and auto.
Yeah, there you go, Connor. Check that out real quick.
Oh man,
Walter Camp. It's a great picture.
Look at this.
Originally born in New, he only coached 5 years at Yale though. I wonder why. The father of American football.
Man. That's a mean stash. I respect that he went horseshoe bald, you know, because
he was a player coach.
I don't have as a bald. I didn't have it in me to watch myself go full horseshoe bald. So I went bald.
So this is interesting. It looks like he defected in the middle of the 1892 season. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. Defected from Yale to Stanford. He had gone 67-2 in 5 seasons at Yale. But then it looks like he finished the 1892 season up at Stanford.
I remember that 1892 season. That was a big year.
Back then it must have taken him like a full week to travel across the country. Yeah. So doing that like
in the middle of the season, they missed 2 games because they were like, God, when is this guy going
to
get here?
They were waiting for Walter Camp to arrive. Yeah.
By the new thing called the railroad. all right. So we have credit to Gary Gramling, our former incredible editor. He used to call it the goulash. But like from there, we have, at least to me, and I don't know about you, but we have this sort of goulash of quarterbacks left. Yep. We have Bo Nix. We have Michael Penix. We have, I don't know, am I missing anyone else that we haven't talked about?
I mean, Spencer Rattler, I think you could throw in there.
Spencer Rattler, the Rattler. Okay.
Well, maybe even if you're feeling froggy, you could throw Bazooka Joe in there, which is the greatest nickname I think I've heard in the last few years for a kid coming into the draft.
Oh,
Joe
for
Milton.
Sure. Yes.
Bazooka Joe is a great nickname.
Are any of those guys to you? I mean, I don't know. Do you have any
Penix.
Sort of? Yeah,
Penix.
You like Penix?
Penix is the one to me. Like where I just he is. Fascinating because so I'll tell you this, like I tweeted this the other day. You know, sometimes you notice little trends when you start making these phone calls around to different teams and stuff. And it's like forever and ever, I felt like the NFL was not nearly as high on Michael Penix as the general public. Like, right? Like I would have told you like in November, December, when everybody was hyping up like Michael Penix, I would say, yeah, I think he's gonna be a second or third round pick. I would say over the last 2 weeks, what I have noticed is coaches are way higher on Michael Penix than scouts are. Mm. And so I asked around, like, how would you explain that? I had one guy who knows Penix say to me, he thinks it's because Penix does things well that you can't coach. Like the dead eye, deep ball accuracy you cannot coach. Mm-hmm. Like being able to get the ball downfield and put it in spots down the field, you cannot coach that. He anticipates. You cannot coach that. Like that's normally something either you have that and you can throw guys open, or you're the guy who needs to see a guy come open before you let go of the ball, right? Like that was Justin Fields' downfall in Chicago, was that he was that second guy. So that makes Penix really interesting to me. Doesn't move great in the pocket. You know, we've seen he's a good athlete because he ran 4.5. Doesn't move great in the pocket. You know, and he's got the injury issues. But he throw and like underneath, like, and I'm going to use a basketball analogy here. I had a couple people tell me this is a three. He's a 3-point shooter, right? Like he is a guy who is deadly from deep, but struggles mid range, struggles with layups. Like some of the things are inexplicable that you would see on tape. And I think some of that's shown up in some of his workouts too. So can you fix that? It's just a fascinating thing with him because I almost feel like he would be like an Al Davis quarterback, right?
Yes.
Like the old school, like, or Norv Turner offense back in the day, right? Like that Cowboys offense where they're going downfield to Irvin and Harper. Like, I feel like he's that type of quarterback. Can you fix the other stuff? And what complicates that is he's been in college 6 years. So you're at least going to have people thinking to themselves, well, you know, if he was going to fix it, this isn't like, you know, like Caleb Williams or J.J. McCarthy or Drake May, where they're 3-year college guys. Like this guy was a senior in high school and those guys were freshmen.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. Like I just think I'm fascinated to see what becomes of him. And then you throw in the lefty thing too. You know, like I'm really, really interested to see what becomes of him because a lot of people have told me like he wouldn't be a great fit in like a Shanahan offense, right?
No.
Like in one of those offense. So like where is his home? Like where does he find a place that's willing to, you know, let him be who he is? This is great deep ball thrower, this guy who, you know, can really operate from the pocket, who's got a ton of experience. He just brings a lot to the table, but there's that other stuff that you worry about.
I love DJ's Sam Bradford comp on him, which just feels like
good.
So apt, you know. But yeah. Penix, you know, I'll say this in defense of Penix. I mean, I don't think that this guy was in a really functional offense until his first year at Washington. So, like, you could say, and, you know, just kind of digging around a little bit, you know, when he was in high school, I think, you know, you have a difference between, like, Bo Nix playing in high school for his dad and running a legitimate pro-style offense.
Right.
A lot of these guys running legitimate wristband pro-style offenses. I think someone said that Michael Penix had, like, 8 plays in high school that they ran and saw one coverage.
He played, like, that Tampa Tech. Actually, I've got a buddy who coached against that school. So, yeah, no,
yeah.
I know. I mean, that one's really interesting.
This is not and I do think that when he got the chance to be around – elite players, elite program, elite coaching, really good offense. I mean, listen, his offensive coordinator, you know, and his head coach,
Ryan Grubb, you know, Kalen DeBoer. Yeah.
I mean, you know, now they're at Alabama, you know, so it's one of those things. There's a reason for that, you know.
I think it's interesting too because he's got to see both sides of it, right? Like, so Kalen DeBoer was with him at Indiana, but for that Indiana team that like they had a great year during the COVID year. For that Indiana team to be what it was, he needed to be the best player on the field on a really consistent basis, right? Like Indiana's just going against the Ohio States and Michigans and Penn States, like in that division of the Big Ten, like it's really tough, like for a team like that. And so he had that experience early in his career of having to be the best player week in, week out. And then he also had the experience of like having a loaded group around him. And he had Fatanu on his offensive line and he had Adunze and McMillan and Polk to throw to. And, you know, playing in this like great scheme, like, so he does have that experience too, of having seen both sides of it, right? Like, and having 6 years in college counts for something. So I'm just fascinated to see what becomes of him. Like, he's just such an interesting prospect. And I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in the first round. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in the third round, which I think adds another layer to it too.
Played pretty good against Michigan considering they knew all the plays.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Just
the spies were up there, you know, so they just had to figure out a different way to do it after they got busted the first time.
I don't think they ever stopped. That's my...
I will say this, though, like that, and that's part of the concern, is that like they had... So Jesse Minter, who I think is a fantastic hire by Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers, and was the DC there at Michigan, Michael Penix had to go up against a pro style defense in the championship game. And I said that thing about the 3-point shooter, right? Like, well, I'd picked that up in the week leading up to the championship game. I asked around to different scouts about McCarthy and Penix to try and preview the game. And that 3-point shooter thing, like, I got it early in the week, and then I vetted it with some other people, and I'm like, yeah, that's the case. And what I saw, if you go back and you watch that game, what I saw was Jesse Minter basically daring Washington to go underneath, to chip away, to go on 10-play, 12-play drives, and it looked like Penix couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to get that part of it out of my head, too.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Zach Wilson is such a cautionary tale now. You know, that inability to work, to sustain the drives, it's out there. I mean, people are afraid of it, and there's no doubt. I mean, when you're a team like the Jets and you take a big swing and a miss on that, it scares the hell out of people. I've one sleeper, and I'm going to ask you if you want to give me a sleeper at the end.
Is it Bazooka Joe?
It's not Bazooka Joe. but I'll just say this about Bo Nix. Show me a quarterback. Again, huge recruit coming out of high school. Started his true freshman year at Auburn. This kid had to, I think, broke his ankle at one point, got benched, had to transfer to Oregon. His freshman year at Auburn, he was at 57.6 completion percentage. His senior year at Oregon set the NCAA record at 77.4. A 188 quarterback rating. I don't care what conference you play in. I don't care if you're playing like, you know, Mercyhurst. That's hard to do. That's hard to do against air. And I like him. I like him a lot. I think that there's something to that guy. I think he's special.
So somebody, I've had a couple people say if he's going in the first round, it's going to be to Denver.
Yes.
Because he's like sort of like a Sean Payton type of point guard quarterback, you know, like an athlete who really is going to be able to come in and, you know, coach his son, all that different stuff, like where he's just made of the right stuff, you know, which I think is probably part of what helped him survive. And I do this stuff before the year where I'll call around to people and I work with Jordan Palmer and Trent Dilfer on this stuff too, because they've seen these kids since they were teenagers. And Jordan worked with Bo Nix coming up. And, I remember talking with Jordan about it. And it's like, this is a really important year for him because they had an offensive coordinator at Oregon, a guy by the name of Kenny Dillingham, who left to go to Arizona State, who's seen as like this, like, I don't know, I guess like a Sean McVay on the college level, right? Like really, really smart. Everybody's trying to steal his offense, all of that. And so, like, there was this question going into this year, is Bo Nix's ascension from Auburn to Oregon a result of that? So I think the fact that he sustained his performance and even got better in some areas after losing that OC is definitely a notch in his belt when you're talking about his NFL stock.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that there's something to that. And especially if you're picking in the back end of the first round, you need a guy. It's like, man, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't know. That's what I think. Is Bazooka Joe going to be your sleeper? Because I'm going to give you a sleeper-ass sleeper, a real sleeper.
I mean, I think, like, the one that I kind of, like, have my eye on would be Michael Pratt.
Okay.
I'm sort of Tulane, interested to see
what baby.
I'm sort of interested to see what happens from him just because you hear enough about him. And I take Rattler out of it. Like, I do know some people that like Rattler, but Pratt just seems to me like he's a guy you take in like the fifth or sixth round. And like, what's interesting about it is that we're always going to compare these now to Brock Purdy, right? Because I think people probably would have said the same thing about Purdy when he came into the league. But it's like, all right, is this guy a starter or a backup? Like, either way, he's probably going to last a long time in the league. Like, that's the sense I've gotten talking to people about Pratt. And it was interesting because I believe he was in the transfer portal and thought about going somewhere else and then chose to just go to the pros. So he'd be one that I'd have, you know, an eye on somewhere in day three.
My sleeper is a NCAA national champion. He has played at three different schools, 2022 New Orleans Bowl MVP and the 2022 Conference USA Newcomer of the Year, Austin Reed of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers.
Oh, so I actually did get a chance to watch him because they played at the Horseshoe this fall.
Love.
He's a good player.
And so
they have a little receiver too, who's really freaking good. And I can't remember his name now, but he's going to probably be another one of these like late picks, but was really, really good. And I can't remember his name. That offense is fun.
I actually had a chance to talk to Austin about the Ohio State game. And it's funny that you mention that. So there was, and people talk about all this stuff all the time. Oh, this guy's got this kind of memory. Isn't it cool that Sean McVay knows the entire other team's roster, all this stuff. I'm talking to Austin Reed. And he's just walking around, and I was like, hey, you know, that Ohio State game, I was like, you know, you were putting something together on that first drive. I was like, I don't expect you to remember this, but I thought you should have gotten PI on that one call. And he's like, oh yeah, on the deep post to whoever, and like name the play, name the time on the clock, name the down, name the cornerback who he thought, you know, committed like the pass interference. Yeah. And super impressive.
The one he wrongly accused of holding.
Well, you know, we all know how corrupt college football is, Albert. And you can't let, you know, you couldn't let Caitlin Clark lose in the Final Four to UConn. You can't let Ohio State lose to Western Kentucky at home.
Yeah, it's true. Well,
I just wanted to sneak that in there, by the way.
70 or something, so yeah.
I just wanted to sneak that take in there, by the way.
They had some issues covering Marvin Harrison in that game.
UConn women got robbed.
See, you think so?
I just wanted to say it to somebody.
I'm like sort of the mind.
You
like,
have to let them take that shot.
That was very clearly a foul, though.
I've watched.
Like, she was moving. Here's the thing. Like, I like the let him play thing and everything else. But if, like, something like that happens right in front of you and you're the ref, what the hell are you supposed to do?
Pretend that you didn't see it. And let,
like, look at the clock and be like, oh, well, there's only 30 seconds left, yes. So I better not call this one.
Yes, you swallow the whistle completely.
I don't know. I have a hard time with that.
By the way,
I'm scarred, though, by, like, the toxicity of youth hockey, and I've seen so many parents yell at so many officials now. It is so much worse than any other sport. Like, it's worse than all the other sports combined in youth hockey. And so, like, I guess maybe I'm a little more sympathetic to the officials than I was a few years ago. So I'd say, like, when you see a foul, what are you supposed to do? Look the other way? Come on, Connor.
Give Gino Auriemma the chance to pull off the upset. I don't know. I'm so happy, though.
I like that Gino is like the white knight in this whole thing now, too. That's a role change for him, isn't it?
It is. I was so happy, though. I loved watching Caitlin Clark play basketball. That was
she's unbelievable,
such
dude. I mean,
a fun. And then South Carolina, like, that team.
South Carolina is a wagon.
They were so fun.
I got crushed for this on Twitter. I think I'm probably still getting crushed for it on Twitter. But if you could take Caitlin Clark, and I think this is a compliment to both sides, you could take Caitlin Clark and trade her for any player, any one player in the South Carolina roster, and South Carolina wins by 40.
You could put. Yes. Yeah.
Because South Carolina is so deep and has so many players, and there was no one on the court that could lift everyone the way that Caitlin Clark did. The most fascinating thing to me is this is her fourth year at Iowa. She sees things so fast.
It's unbelievable.
That her teammates like really struggle to keep up with it. Like, you can see it. Like, there's so many times when she sees something that her teammates don't see yet, where she'll fire the ball from half court, like over to the other side as someone's cutting across, and like the player like on the other end of it will not be ready for the ball to come. And this is after 4 years of playing with her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's like got like that basketball genius thing where it's like she sees things like a step or two ahead of everyone else.
I will say this, though, and no one came here for my women's basketball takes. And again, I'm like, I'm going to be very.
But they're here for them now.
But I'm just going to be upfront with the fact that, like, you know, so I watched all of her games in the tournament. Those were the women's college basketball games I watched this season. So, I'm not an expert. But I will just say, generally being a fan of basketball, ball movement in women's college basketball is so much better than men's. Like, yeah. There are so many mind-blowing passes in the women's game, and it's like across the board. It wasn't just Caitlin Clark. Like, the ball movement in that sport is awesome, and I'm now like, I'm in. Like, that's a credit to her. Like,
well,
that's
I think
a must
that's
watch
why
for me.
Like people like I don't know. Like, I think there's that whole thing, like, you know, with soccer fans where like there's that like segment of soccer fans that don't really want the game, don't want yes. more people watching,
yeah.
and get like, and we'll get all like uppity with you when you like try to say something about the sport, like, well, actually, like, you're a moron because A, B, C, and D that you said isn't true, or you sound like an idiot when you say it. And I feel like that like sort of started to bubble up over the last 3 days, like during the women's Final Four, where you say something nice about Caitlin Clark. It's like, well, what about South Carolina? It's like, if we're all being honest, the reason everybody was talking about it over the last 3 days is because of Caitlin Clark. Yeah. All these people would not be watching those games if it's not for Caitlin Clark. So accept that and as a good thing that is like the front door for people walking through to come and watch women's basketball.
Yeah.
Like, don't look at it like, well, you should have known about this, and they're not getting enough credit here. Everybody, I mean, all I had to do was look down at the little score box and see that South Carolina was 37-0, which, by the way, I didn't know before yesterday, before turning it on.
That's true.
I didn't know they're a great team. And then you watch 5 minutes, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is the best team. Like, it's not a bad thing that Caitlin Clark opened the door for everybody to come to walk through. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a bad thing. And don't sit there and take shots at people who got interested in this because of her.
Yeah. Like I love it now. I'm in.
It's a great thing. It's a great thing.
I am. I love the LSU coach. I think she's like just
Kim Mulkey.
Just so wild. Like the whole, like, again,
I thought with the whole Kent Babb thing, and I'm buddies with Kent.
I love Kent.
Like,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like Kent's great. Like Kent's one of the best sports journalists in America. I sort of wondered at the end of this is like, was there a little like evil genius thing going on here with Kim Mulkey? Because I read Kent's story and it didn't make me hate her. It just didn't. Like I read it and it's like, oh, well, you know, she's a sort of a product of where she's from and, you know, like sort of old school. And like everybody's had coaches in their past that were like, that were tough,
yeah.
you know, like, so it didn't make me hate her. It made me more think like, oh, she's very much a product of her environment, where she came from, her upbringing, all of that, right? Like she's a product of all of that. And then I thought about it and I'm like, okay, so like Kim Mulkey came out before and I thought it was stupid when she did it, because when she came out like on the front end, it was like, oh, you're just calling more attention to a story that's going to be really bad, you know? And like oh, there are a lot of people that wouldn't be paying attention to this otherwise. And then I realized, oh my God. So on the back end of this, what ended up happening was the people who liked her and who were supporting her are only emboldened further that like this was a hit job, right? Like, and like there was a lot of like, oh, the Washington Post hit job miss, which that wasn't what Kent was doing, but like it emboldened people to think that way. And then people on the other side of it were like, oh, that wasn't so bad. So was there like an evil genius thing going on here with Kim Mulkey where she had the whole thing gamed out right?
Yeah. I just like people that go to that level. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I just love like the, you know, I don't know. And so again, I'm so...
It was great for Kent too. I mean, like Kent and Kim Mulkey both kind of came out of this winners, you know?
Yeah. And I'm so grateful for that experience because now I'm in. Like next year, I'm going to be like, what's Dawn Staley doing? What's Kim Mulkey doing? You know, you fall in love with some of the other players on Iowa at that point, and then you'll start following them next year. And, you know, because, you know, there's still a lot of talented players there, but I don't know. I had a lot of fun. This whole March Madness was great.
Yeah.
It was a much needed break for the NFL for me. Like I just,
tonight'll be interesting too.
And tonight'll be great too.
Was Zach Edey, who's been in college for roughly 33
yeah,
years.
Yeah. He's the Bo Nix of Purdue. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, I have Purdue. So,
oh, do you?
Yeah. Because
did you pick them at the beginning?
Yeah. I picked Purdue all the way because everybody else in the bracket had UConn and I'm in a bracket.
Oh, so it's a way of
yeah. I'm in a bracket with like a D1 coach from the women's side who knows the game like incredibly well, and so it's like okay.
Oh, so you got to fight fire with fire.
You got to take a back door in there somewhere. I mean, she, you know, these guys are way smarter than I am. So
I don't know if this is true. Have you heard this that Zach Edey can't get NIL money because he's Canadian?
What?
Yeah. So somebody told me that. great research by me not looking this up first, but like, yeah, so someone told me that Zach Edey cannot get NIL money because he's Canadian. And there's a twist in the rules or whatever, which sucks because, like, this is a
producer
guy who...
Shelby said it's true.
Okay, there you go. So
we have to, yeah.
That sucks because this guy, like, isn't, like, a great NBA prospect just because he's kind of, like, from a different... He's, like, a player from a different era. So this is the guy who you'd want to, like, cash in while he's in college.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he'll play in Europe forever or whatever if he doesn't make it the NBA. But, yeah, I don't know why, but, like, because he's Canadian, he cannot accept NIL money.
That's terrible. Poor Zach Edey. Well, let's get him a national title tonight, then. Let's go.
Yep.
Let's go.
Hey, I'm all in for the Big Ten, so go Boilers.
All right. Well, thank you guys again. I mean, like we said, it's so good to be back. Obviously, any of these things, these situations are bittersweet, you know, but for those of us who are here with you guys, I mean, we're really grateful for that. And so we will see you next week. I'm very happy to be able to say that. Matt and Gilberto will be, as we're going along, I think we'll get back into the fold as well. But, you know, Albert and I are here, and we're looking forward to it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.